A warm welcome to our listeners to our show called Let's Talk. This is the show where we talk about various topics that might influence your daily life or is already influencing your daily life. Our team is Dr. Baroldi. He is a specialist medical practitioner and medical sexologist. Myself, Krista, I'm a psychologist and a psychosexologist. And today, not in the studio with us, but he is part of the team, is Shaul Grieff, specialized counselor with a special interest in gay and lesbian relationships. Today, we are going to address the elephant in the room, hormones and testosterone. Now, these are terms that are being used loosely by everybody, and everybody says, I'm having a hormone day. And somebody will say, oh, no, that one's got too much testosterone.
Right.
I think we need to break it down to bare basics. Okay. If we talk about hormones and testosterone, what are we talking about?
Okay, so testosterone is a hormone, but let's start with what are hormones. Hormones are chemical substances that are made by the body and that circulate in the body. And they control a variety of processes in the body. And depending on which hormone it is, and depending on where it's working, the effects will be different.
So it's quite complicated.
It's very complicated.
Is that why when the hormones are all at play, things become complicated?
I think one way of looking at this is the different kind of hormones, you can look at it in terms of money. So you can go into a store and you can pay with cash or you can pay with a credit card.
Okay.
If those were hormones, it would be two different hormones. And what they would initiate in that store is different.
Okay.
In terms of where the hormone works, it depends on which store you're in. So your money is going to do different things if you're sitting at Pick and Pay or if you're sitting at a train station. It will be used to have a different outcome.
Okay. So each hormone has got a specific job.
Each hormone has got many jobs depending on where it's used.
And now you're really getting complicated.
I'm really complicated. Okay.
So, and they say us women are complicated. Is that the reason why?
So let's start with testosterone. It's probably the easiest one to start off with. Testosterone is the male hormone.
Okay.
It is what makes males males. It is responsible for a variety of things in the body. So it's responsible for growth of the sexual organs, both in utero and before puberty or during puberty. It is responsible for sexual drive. It is responsible for production of sperm. It is responsible for the hair pattern on the body. It is responsible for hair loss later on the scalp. So it's responsible for all the external male characteristics.
Okay.
And it suppresses estrogen, which is the female hormone. So it suppresses estrogen so that men don't get breasts. And if they do have breasts, or man boobs as we call them, then there is no breast tissue in it. It's normally just fat.
Okay.
But that's a different discussion. So testosterone is the hormone that makes us men. In women, you have estrogen that does exactly the same thing. Progesterone is a hormone that is found in both males and females. In females, it creates a reproductive cycle, and it is probably mostly involved with pregnancies. In males, progesterone has got a much lower prevalence. It doesn't do very much. And it is often used by the body to make testosterone.
If I understand correctly, we've actually mentioned three different hormones. The testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. All three of them are present in both male and female. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So it's just that the female has got predominantly the estrogen.
Correct.
And the male has got predominantly the testosterone.
Correct.
And it's when they become, to a certain extent, imbalanced for the specific individual or gender, that's when we start seeing women with more hair growth on their faces or men being more effeminate. Or does that not have any impact on that?
I don't think it has an effect on men being more effeminate.
Okay.
But it certainly does have an effect on women developing moustaches, yes. So in men, for instance, if there's a low testosterone, and relatively speaking, then the estrogen is higher, mm-hmm. you are going to get man boobs, basically, mm-hmm. Because you start stimulating those tissues that normally wouldn't be stimulated.
Okay.
But all three of them are neurotransmitters. Mm-hmm. So they also, they don't just work on the body, they also work on the brain. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very important.
What does that mean?
So in other words, they have an effect on the brain. So if your estrogen, for instance, is low just before you menstruate for the month, mm-hmm. then you're ratty and irritable and you've got that premenstrual syndrome. In men, if the testosterone drops, which it does with age, unfortunately, you land up with the midlife crisis, as it were.
Okay.
That's the most obvious thing, where you just feel that you're just not who you used to be, mm-hmm. because your testosterone is now low. So now you go and look at for other things that will validate who you are.
Mm.
So we look at buying a flashy car at 45 or 50. We look at, you know, joining a motorcycle gang at 60.
Okay.
Those kind of things to try and capture again something of who you were. Because testosterone in the brain is responsible for a number of things. One is mood.
Mm-hmm.
Two is memory. So mm-hmm. testosterone is low, your memory is likely to be a little bit impaired.
Mm-hmm.
You can, of course, on the mood side of things, present with depression.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but the most important thing that it does in the brain is drive.
Okay.
So it is responsible for the drive, that feeling of, I get up in the morning, right, I've got a whole lot of things to do, where do I start, I'm going to get this sorted out by today. As opposed to, oh my God, it's Monday again. Do I really have to do all this? It's that drive pushing forward.
Mm.
And it is responsible for assertiveness.
Okay.
So part of the male characteristic is we're doing it, and we're doing it now, and we're doing it this way.
Okay.
Right? When we have too much testosterone, there's an overload of testosterone, particularly bodybuilders that inject too much and so on, that assertiveness goes over into aggression. And then we have the so-called roids rage,
okay.
steroids rage. So just a quick definition between the two, just to not confuse people. Testosterone has got two basic effects. One is, well, actually three. One is the mental one that we've just mentioned. The other one is the sexual effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is the anabolic effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the anabolic effect is the... what it does is it maintains muscle mass, it increases muscle mass, it maintains endurance, it maintains bone strength. And what happens with, so it does all three. Bodybuilders want more muscle, so they will go and inject testosterone when they don't need it to try and push up that muscle effect.
Mm.
Okay, and the ratio in testosterone of its anabolic muscle building to its sexual effects, the ratio is 1:1. And what has happened is over the years, they've taken this testosterone molecule and changed it to try and get more anabolic effects. That's where the anabolic steroids come from. The root is still testosterone.
Okay.
But the anabolic steroids then will have a ratio of muscle building to sexual, which might be 2:1 or 3:1. Okay. But at the end of the day, the overload can still cause problems in terms of aggression and liver and a whole lot of other things.
It's quite technical, and that's why I'm very glad that there's doctors like you that deal with these things, because I think us laymen will really we tend to get things a lot wrong in ways that we shouldn't have tampered with.
Mm.
So it sounds to me, as before we take the break to go and listen to some music, to sort of just what I'm getting from this is it's so important to have the balance.
Correct.
The way that hormones have been designed in our bodies is to be in balance. The moment that we go out of balance, whether it is either through aging or some kind of illnesses or some kind of external use for bodybuilders, we're actually messing. around with the balance.
Correct.
And we need to get the balance back into place.
Absolutely correct.
So we will, you're listening to GSA Radio, where you are family, and we're going to take a short break and just listen to some music, and then we'll be back listening and talking to and with Dr. Itzia Baraldi about hormones and testosterone.
Are our presenters saying something controversial? Tell us what you think on Twitter by using the handle @GaySAradio.
A warm welcome to our listeners to our show called Let's Talk. This is the show where we talk about various topics that might influence your daily life or is already influencing your daily life. Our team is Dr. Baraldi. He is a specialist medical practitioner and medical sexologist. Myself, Krista. I'm a psychologist and a psychosexologist, and today, not in the studio with us, but he is part of the team, is Shaul Grieff, specialized counselor with a special interest in gay and lesbian relationships. Today, we are going to address the elephant in the room, hormones and testosterone. Now, Itzia, these are terms that are being used loosely by everybody, and everybody says, I'm having a hormone day. And somebody will say, oh, no, that one's got too much testosterone.
Right.
I think we need to break it down to bare basics. Okay. If we talk about hormones and testosterone, what are we talking about?
Okay, so testosterone is a hormone, but let's start with what are hormones. Hormones are chemical substances that are made by the body and that circulate in the body. And they control a variety of processes in the body. And depending on which hormone it is, and depending on where it's working, the effects will be different.
So it's quite complicated.
It's very complicated.
Is that why when the hormones are all at play, things become complicated?
Complicated, yeah. I think one way of looking at this is the different kind of hormones.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at it in terms of money. So you can go into a store and you can pay with cash or you can pay with a credit card.
Okay.
If those were hormones, it would be two different hormones. And what they would initiate in that store is different.
Okay.
In terms of where the hormone works, it depends on which store you're in. So your money is going to do different things if you're sitting at Pick and Pay or if you're sitting at a train station.
Mm-hmm.
It will be used to have a different outcome.
Okay. So each hormone has got a specific job.
Each hormone has got many jobs depending on where it's used.
And now you're really getting complicated.
I'm really complicated. Okay.
So, and they say us women are complicated. Is that the reason why?
So let's start with testosterone. It's probably the easiest one to start off with. Testosterone is the male hormone.
Okay.
It is what makes males males. It is responsible for a variety of things in the body. So it's responsible for growth of the sexual organs, both in utero and before puberty or during puberty. It is responsible for sexual drive. It is responsible for a production of sperm. It is responsible for the hair pattern on the body. It is responsible for hair loss later on the scalp. So it's responsible for all the external male characteristics.
Okay.
And it suppresses estrogen, which is the female hormone. So it suppresses estrogen so that men don't get breasts. And if they do have breasts, or man boobs as we call them, then there is no breast tissue in it. It's normally just fat.
Okay.
But that's a different discussion. So testosterone is the hormone that makes us men. In women, you have estrogen that does exactly the same thing. Progesterone is a hormone that is found in both males and females. In females, it creates a reproductive cycle, and it is probably mostly involved with pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
In males, progesterone has got a much lower prevalence. It doesn't do very much.
Mm-hmm.
And it is often used by the body to make testosterone.
If I understand correctly, we've actually mentioned three different hormones. The testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone.
Mm.
All three of them are present in both male and female. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay. Correct. So it's just that the female has got predominantly the estrogen.
Correct.
And the male has got predominantly the testosterone.
Correct.
And it's when they become, to a certain extent, imbalanced for the specific individual or gender, that's when we start seeing women with more hair growth on their faces or men being more effeminate. Or does that not have any impact on that?
I don't think it has an effect on men being more effeminate.
Okay.
But it certainly does have an effect on women developing moustaches, yes. So in men, for instance, if there's a low testosterone, and relatively speaking, then the estrogen is higher, mm-hmm. you are going to get man boobs, basically, mm-hmm. Because you start stimulating those tissues that normally wouldn't be stimulated.
Okay.
But all three of them are neurotransmitters. Mm-hmm. So they don't just work on the body, they also work on the brain. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very important.
What does that mean?
So in other words, they have an effect on the brain. So if your estrogen, for instance, is low just before you menstruate for the month, mm-hmm. then you're ratty and irritable and you've got that premenstrual syndrome. In men, if the testosterone drops, which it does with age, unfortunately, you land up with the midlife crisis, as it were.
Okay.
That's the most obvious thing, where you just feel that you're just not who you used to be. Mm. Because your testosterone is now low. So now you go and look at for other things that will validate who you are. Mm. So we look at buying a flashy car at 45 or 50. We look at, you know, joining a motorcycle gang at 60.
Okay.
Those kind of things to try and capture again something of who you were. Because testosterone in the brain is responsible for a number of things. One is mood.
Mm-hmm.
Two is memory. So mm-hmm. testosterone is low, your memory is likely to be a little bit impaired.
Mm-hmm.
You can, of course, on the mood side of things, present with depression.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But the most important thing that it does in the brain is drive.
Okay.
So it is responsible for the drive, that feeling of, I get up in the morning, right, I've got a whole lot of things to do. Where do I start? I'm going to get this sorted out by today. As opposed to, oh my God, it's Monday again. Do I really have to do all this? It's that drive pushing forward.
Mm.
And it is responsible for assertiveness.
Okay.
So part of the male characteristic is we're doing it, and we're doing it now, and we're doing it this way.
Okay. Right?
When we have too much testosterone, it's an overload of testosterone, particularly bodybuilders that inject too much and so on. That assertiveness goes over into aggression. And then we have the so-called roids rage,
okay.
steroids rage. So just a quick definition between the two, just to not confuse people. Testosterone has got two basic effects. One is, well, actually three. One is the mental one that we've just mentioned. The other one is the sexual effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is the anabolic effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the anabolic effect is the, what it does is it maintains muscle mass. It increases muscle mass. It maintains endurance. It maintains bone strength. And what happens with, so it does all three. Bodybuilders want more muscle. So they will go and inject testosterone when they don't need it to try and push up that muscle effect.
Mm.
Okay, and the ratio in testosterone of its anabolic muscle building to its sexual effects, the ratio is 1:1. And what has happened is over the years, they've taken this testosterone molecule and changed it to try and get more anabolic effects. That's where the anabolic steroids come from. The root is still testosterone.
Okay.
But the anabolic steroids then will have a ratio of muscle building to sexual, which might be 2:1 or 3:1. Okay. But at the end of the day, the overload can still cause problems in terms of aggression and liver and a whole lot of other things.
It's quite technical, and that's why I'm very glad that there's doctors like you that deal with these things, because I think us laymen will really not get, we tend to get things a lot wrong, like wrong in ways that we shouldn't have tampered with. Mm. So it sounds to me as before we take the break to go and listen to some music, to sort of just what I'm getting from this is it's so important to have the balance.
Correct.
The way that hormones have been designed in our bodies is to be in balance. The moment that we go out of balance, whether it is either through aging or some kind of illnesses or some kind of external use for bodybuilders, we're actually messing around with the balance.
Correct.
And we need to get the balance back into place.
Absolutely correct.
So we will, you're listening to Gay SA Radio where you are family, and we're going to take a short break and just listen to some music, and then we'll be back listening and talking to and with Dr. Itzia Baraldi about hormones and testosterone.
Hello, darlings. This is your Queen of the Skies, Kathy Specific here. For the first time in history, an all-gay vacation hits the shores of Africa. Proudly brought to you by AfriGay. Join myself and the seductively saucy trolley dollies as we take you to the beautiful island of Mauritius to experience magnificent sun, sea and surf, a few decadent parties and the chance to make fabulous friends from all over the world. This unique event will be hosted by South Africa's aviation goddesses and your tantalizingly tempting poster girls for travel. For more information, buckle up, bitches, and book your spot at gaysayradio.co.za.
You are listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family. A warm welcome to all our listeners to our show called Let's Talk. This is a show where we are going to talk about various topics that influence or can influence our daily life. The team, a warm welcome to our Let's Talk team, Dr. Itzia Baraldi, specialist medical practitioner and medical sexologist, myself, Christa Kutsier, psychologist and psychosexologist, and another team member, Shol Grief, specialized counselor with special interest in gay and lesbian relationships. So today, it's only the two of us, Itzia and myself, in the studio, and we're talking about erectile dysfunction.
Good morning, Christa. Yes, let's talk about it.
Or, in short, we often, you will hear people referring to it as ED.
Yes.
So, what is erectile dysfunction?
So, erectile dysfunction in the science is defined as the inability to get or maintain an erection that is good enough for penetration.
Okay.
That's a scientific definition.
I think it's quite important that you actually say that, because I've had in the practice people coming to me and to say that they're complaining of erectile dysfunction just to find out that they cannot go 5 rounds anymore.
Correct, yeah.
So now they can go only 1 round, and now they say to me, I think I've got ED.
Yeah. So let's address that right up front, because it is a major issue. So when you've had sex and you've ejaculated, you've had an orgasm and you've ejaculated, that is followed by what we call the refractory period.
Okay.
It is a period of time when the penis will not respond.
Mm-hmm.
It basically, you can see it as it needs to rest, it needs to recover, it needs to whatever. That refractory period is very short when we're young. It can be as much as 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But as we get older, it becomes longer and longer and longer. And in your 50s and 60s, it can be a day before the penis can recover and have another round of sex, as it were.
Mm.
So the multiple rounds thing is a very interesting concept.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens basically is, in certain populations, when they're having sex, there is very little foreplay. So we need to remember that when we're looking at males and females, our sexual response cycles are completely different. And we don't actually know that.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a male, I think a female will respond exactly the same way that I do sexually. I've got nothing else to compare it to. I don't even, most of the time, have other males that I can compare it to.
If you have those to compare it to, a lot of them don't, they use the opportunity to brag or boast or over-emphasize certain factors. That's not always the exact truth.
That's not always the, no, there is a very big bragging component to it, particularly at the bar after a couple of drinks. Mm. So in females, females get sexually aroused at a much slower rate than males do. With the result that very often what happens in heterosexual sexual connection is that the male is finished way before the female is in, anywhere near an orgasm. You know, we joke about, you know, the most fun 3 minutes of this year, that kind of thing. So in average, it takes about 3 to 4 minutes for a man to ejaculate and have an orgasm and ejaculate. For a woman, it can be as long as 12 to 15 or even 20 minutes. Okay. So what really happens is, in most cases, he's finished and she's nowhere near being satisfied. So what does the guy do? He hangs around for a few minutes, gets an erection again, and goes for a second round, and a third round, and a fourth round, until such time as the female says, okay, I've had enough now. Okay? Because now that may all be very well as a coping mechanism when you're young. But as you get older, you can't do that anymore. And we often see patients coming in saying, I've got a problem, I just can't go all these rounds. There's nothing wrong with the erection. There's nothing wrong with anything.
And I think that's the important part when we talk about erectile dysfunction. It's like you were saying, is to get a hard enough erection in order to penetrate. And if you cannot do that, that's when you talk about erectile dysfunction.
Correct. So erectile dysfunction is not about my penis is not doing what I want it to do. Okay? Erectile dysfunction is a physiological thing. So the multiple round thing is not erectile dysfunction. It is simply a the refractory period that gets longer as we get older. Okay. And how do we fix that? Very simply, you have to accept that it exists. And you have to change the way you have heterosexual sex. Because that is what foreplay is all about. Okay? Getting your female partner closer to orgasm with foreplay before you actually penetrate and finish the round, as it were.
Okay.
So that's not erectile dysfunction. Erectile dysfunction, as we said, is the inability to achieve or maintain an erection that is long enough for penetration.
Okay.
Now, there are a number of reasons for that. Aging certainly is a cause. So the older we get, the more things start going haywire. But essentially, the penis is a blood vessel, and it needs to fill up with blood in order to become erect and to function. Now, there are two components to that. One is the nerve input. So the nerve stimulation that goes from the brain into the penis and says, you now need to open up the blood vessels so that the blood can flow in. And there can be problems at that level. And so as we get older, for instance, we find that the brain stimulation to the penis in men becomes less and less effective. And men, they need more and more direct physical stimulation in order to get that message to the penis. So when males are young, they can be walking in a shopping center, they see somebody that they find sexually attractive, and before they know they've got an erection. That doesn't happen as you get older. That all goes. That initial brain stimulation becomes weaker and weaker, and it doesn't happen. So you need more physical stimulation in order to get the message to the penis that it's now time to open up the blood vessels. The other problem that can happen is that the message goes through, but the blood vessels don't open. They don't respond because of a number of things, including diabetes, the big one, cholesterol problems, high blood pressure. Those are the three big ones that can cause erectile dysfunction. A lot of people say testosterone. My testosterone must be low. That's why my penis is not working the way it should. And we must remember that testosterone does very little for performance, sexual performance. It is actually much more involved in sexual desire. Okay? So if testosterone is low, you might have low desire. But pushing up the testosterone is not necessarily going to help the erectile dysfunction. Having said that, all the interventions that we have to treat erectile dysfunction work better if the testosterone is normal. So it is something that one needs to look at when we are dealing with erectile dysfunction.
Something that is, you mentioned now when you were saying is over and above the fact that the brain communication to the genitals as we aging get weaker, and that could have an impact on that. What I'm hearing is that if you are experiencing erectile dysfunction, somehow you have to praise the penis for telling you that there's something else underlying. Yeah, yeah. So we actually should be grateful that our bodies are somehow shouting out and to say, you need to have some things checked out that needs to be addressed. Because, you know, if you have cholesterol problems or diabetes or something and you're not aware of it, you're actually a walking time bomb.
Correct. So the research shows us that erectile dysfunction normally starts on average 3 to 5 years before your first heart attack.
Uh-huh.
And that is...
Well done for the penis.
Yeah. It is your barometer. It is your early warning system.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is that the artery, the blood vessel that feeds the penis, is a third of the size of the arteries that feed the heart. And therefore, it will block first.
Okay.
Okay. So it's a very early warning system. Granted, that's not all the reasons for erectile dysfunction. Emotional issues can also have a problem. Relationship issues can also have a problem. Erectile dysfunction does cause performance anxiety, which we'll get to in a moment. And eventually all of those factors are present in the bedroom when you're trying to have sex.
Okay.
But and they can all be addressed, all of them. But the physical problems, the cholesterol and the sugar, are the primary thing that needs to be addressed.
Which can be life-threatening.
I think
we're going to take a short break and listen to some music, and we will be back and continue our conversation about erectile dysfunction.
Gay SA Radio is an online radio station, and we stream through the internet. And many people say, but what about my data? Well, it only takes 30 megabytes per hour to listen to Gay SA Radio. Now compare that to YouTube or Facebook, and you will know Gay SA Radio is affordable. Gay SA Radio, where you are family.
You are listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family, and today we are busy talking about erectile dysfunction. And just before the break, we actually came to some kind of an understanding that the penis, if the day that the penis starts behaving as if it doesn't want to work properly, it's actually a messenger to say that there's something else going on and we need to address that. And often it can be physiological, so that needs to be addressed with a medical practitioner. And then what treatments are available?
So there are a number of treatments that are available for erectile dysfunction. The primary thing to do, of course, is to treat the cause. So we need to have a look at weight control. We need to have a look at sugar.
Weight control meaning?
Overweight.
Okay.
Overweight. Obesity causes a lot of physiological problems. So the weight is an issue. Cholesterol and sugar problems often go together with overweight. The three... Overweight, high cholesterol, and high blood pressure are metabolic syndrome, which is the early stage of diabetes. So eventually those will go together, and you will be a full-blown diabetic. So you need to control each one of those elements. So first of all, we need to control those elements. Once that's done, we are better off at treating the penis itself. Now, a lot of people don't want to wait 2 years to lose weight before the penis starts working again. So what I'm talking about now is the long-term approach, but most people want a short-term approach. They want to be able to have sex. And one of the things that happens when you have erectile problems is that you end up with performance anxiety. So that is a situation where we've tried to have sex and it didn't work. The damn thing wouldn't stay up. And it's happened 2 or 3 or 4 times, and I've become terribly embarrassed about it. And now I'm in a situation where I potentially can have sex. But do I want to have sex? Do I want to try again when I know the damn thing's not going to work? Do I want to embarrass myself again?
Yeah. Okay?
And that's called performance anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do go through and start having sex, What very often happens is your mind is not in the moment. Your mind is not in the sexual act. Mm-hmm. Your mind is concentrating on this damn penis and will it work?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it won't, because that creates anxiety. Anxiety is driven by adrenaline and noradrenaline, more hormones. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And those two hormones are also the hormones that tell the erection to go down once you've had your sex. So you're pushing it all up.
Mm.
Okay? And so you'll end up with this performance anxiety, and I'm just not going to go and put myself into that situation anymore. So that is something that needs to be addressed as well. In terms of the physical interventions that we can do, remember that cholesterol and the blood pressure and all those things are long-term things.
Yeah.
In the short term, we can sort out testosterone levels.
Okay.
If they are low, we need to bring them up. And then we have two basic interventions that can improve the erection. The first one is an oral, it's tablets.
Mm-hmm.
They're called the PDE5 inhibitors.
Mm-hmm.
And the PDE5 inhibitors, what they do is they open up the blood vessels all over the body, but in particular in the penis, in the male penis or in the female clitoris.
Mm-hmm.
Same physiology.
Mm.
And that allows the blood to flow through, and it allows to be able to get a better erection. There are a few of them on the market. They will basically work the same way. The only difference is how long do they work for.
You do get it from a physician.
Yeah, so they are all on prescription.
Mm.
So like your steroids and testosterone that you can get at the gym, which are all black market,
mm-hmm.
and you've got no idea what's in there,
mm-hmm.
you can also get some of these medicines on the street. Basically, they're not registered, they are illegal, and you have no idea what you're swallowing because it's not controlled.
So we're actually back to the discussion that we had in a previous session to say is when we're dealing with processes that are happening within the body, we need the eyes and the intervention of a trained physician to assist us when we're going to start meddling in balances and imbalances, because we actually have no idea. We're going blind.
Yeah.
And we actually have responsibility towards ourselves to take care of ourselves.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's a little bit like we'll swallow anything provided it's natural. you've heard
your
petite. My petite, yeah. Provided it's natural. Who guarantees that it's natural? I have no idea. When everything is all ground up into a tablet, how do you know what's in there?
Mm-hmm.
You need some kind of a regulatory system that regularly checks those things and says, yes, what they say on the label is, in fact, what is in the tablet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You need that guarantee. Because everything that you swallow eventually turns into a chemical which eventually has an effect on the body.
Mm.
And you would like to know which one, what chemicals you're actually swallowing. So, and why. Remember also, we also need to remember that if it's so-called natural, it's not necessarily without any side effects.
Mm-hmm.
So some of these drugs can have drug-drug interactions where you take two medicines or two compounds together and they interfere with each other.
Okay.
So that also needs to be kept in mind. So if I'm prescribing a PDE5 inhibitor or any other drug, I need to know what else the patient is taking, and I need to know what is the potential. I need to work out what is the potential for things going wrong in between.
Absolutely.
And very often patients don't tell you when they're swallowing things that are off the counter.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So one of the things that happens is if you have erectile dysfunction, one of the things that patients do is they don't talk about it to anybody.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so we're at the bar, and you know, we hear that Peter's got erectile dysfunction. Shame. Rather him than me. I'm so glad I don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the next morning, I go off into the pharmacy, and I go and look at all the stuff that I can get off the shelf that is supposed to help for erectile dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a couple of herbs that have got some kind of effect there, but I just want our listeners to remember that if there was a herb that really had a good effect,
mm-hmm.
I can guarantee you a pharmaceutical company would have grabbed it and marketed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And everything for erectile dysfunction is Schedule 4 because it does have effects. So anything that you buy over the counter, essentially, you're wasting your money. There is also the placebo effect. Okay? And the placebo effect works in the way that I have now bought this. There's make a lot of promises for this drug. Three of my friends are taking it, and I've spent a lot of money on this. Therefore, it will work.
Okay? I'm willing it to work.
I am going to will it to work. I am going to turn up that brain to penis connection, and I am going to tell the damn thing to work.
It's interesting that you say it, because of what we were saying earlier, is that with aging, the brain penis connection somehow starts deteriorating. So if I have a lot invested, and in this case, financial investment.
And emotional, yes.
My brain says it has to work.
Yes.
So it actually highlights the connection between the brain and the penis.
Absolutely, yes. And what we often see is when patients eventually come in, they've tried all these things. Mm. And what I often hear is, look, I tried these pills and they worked for the first 2-3 weeks. They worked, and then now they're not working anymore. Am I getting worse?
Mm.
No, you're not getting worse. Your brain is just tired of the novelty.
had to overwork to get the penis to work.
Yeah, correct. So we are looking at treating with prescribed products that are with the quality and the content is measured and guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking at the PDE5 inhibitors. Those are the oral tablets.
Okay.
There's three of them on the market and a number of generics on the market as well. And they all work differently, but they should all work for most patients.
Okay.
For patients where that doesn't work anymore, where there has been so much damage to the penis that those drugs are just not strong enough, then there are the intracavernosal injections.
Okay.
Why am I saying where there's too much damage to the penis? Quite simply because a penis that is not erect is not breathing. Remember, it is a blood vessel.
Okay.
It needs blood flow into it to get its nourishment, to get its food supply, to get its oxygen supply, which is why men get erections while they sleep.
Mm.
It's part of feeding it. If you don't get those erections, your penis is starved of nutrients and oxygen, and eventually there will be damage, right?
Is that why they say if you don't use it, you lose it?
Absolutely. 100%. And that goes for the penis as well as for anything else in the body.
Because there's another myth going around where some of the men will say is, I'm having ED because I've overused my penis. So that is another one that's actually running around and people talking to say is, you overused your penis. It's tired of being used.
Yeah,
and that's why ED. So it's important to actually hear this so that we can get the facts out there.
Mm, absolutely. There's no such thing as overusing your penis. That's really a myth, and it is a blame-shame game that we do in society. So you've overused your penis, and it doesn't work. Well, that's your due reward. Mm-hmm. I haven't, and mine is still working. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's the us and them and the shame and the blame. That's nonsense, all nonsense.
So to wrap it up, I think when there's been so much valuable information about erectile dysfunctions, and thank you for opening it up, and I'm sure we can have long conversations about this, and we'll most probably revisit this in a couple of sessions later.
I'm sure, yes.
What is important is that when the penis is not behaving the way that we need it to behave to be able to penetrate, there's a physician to go to,
correct,
and you can actually go and have it addressed. There's treatment available. And what you've also touched on, is often there's some psychological and emotional trauma or emotional processes that need to be addressed. We were talking about performance anxiety, relationship dynamics, those type of things. So it most probably will be useful to say is, if I experience erectile dysfunction, there's two lines of assistance and support I need to explore. The one is the physiological, which will be your medical doctor. And the other one is to find a psychologist or a counselor that deals specifically with sexual concerns, that we can actually just deal with the psychological and emotional aspects. Because if you address both of those, then we're actually heading towards a success story in the future.
Correct. And they are never not together. They are always together.
Mm.
So a sexual problem can cause a psychological effect. A psychological effect can cause a sexual problem. They are always intertwined. They are never two separate things.
Thank you. You're listening to GSA Radio, where you are family, and we're looking forward to having you back at our next talk show.
Hello, darlings. This is your Queen of the Skies, Kathy Specific here. For the first time in history, an all-gay vacation hits the shores of Africa. Proudly brought to you by AfriGay. Join myself and the seductively saucy trolley dollies as we take you to the beautiful island of Mauritius to experience magnificent sun, sea and surf, a few decadent parties and the chance to make fabulous friends from all over the world. This unique event will be hosted by South Africa's aviation goddesses and your tantalizingly tempting poster girls for travel. For more information, buckle up, bitches, and book your spot at gaysayradio.co.za.
You are listening to GaySA Radio, where you are family. Welcome to all our listeners to our show called Let's Talk. This is the show where we are going to talk about various topics that influence our daily lives or can influence our daily lives. A warm welcome to the Let's Talk team, Dr. Ezio Baroldi, our specialist medical practitioner and medical sexologist, myself, Christa Kutsia, psychologist and psychosexologist, and our other team member, Shaul Grieff, specialized counselor with special interest in gay and lesbian relationships. For today's talk, it's myself and Dr. Baroldi, and we are talking about ejaculatory problems.
Good morning.
A big word.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What are these? What problems are these?
So, ejaculatory problems are situations where the ejaculation is not what we want it to be.
Okay. So, what we or what they? Our partners?
A bit of both. I think a bit of both. So, let's start with premature ejaculation.
Perfect.
Okay. Premature ejaculation happens when the orgasm is too quick. And so the male orgasm is so quick that it doesn't really allow for the orgasm of the other partner.
Okay. Right?
So, we start playing and boom, it's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be distressing to both parties.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Heterosexual, gay, whatever. It can be distressing because we've just started and boom, it's finished.
Mm-hmm.
So what causes that? Well, excitement can cause that. So if it's something that happens every now and again, because you've met someone that is just so hot, the excitement can do it.
Mm.
Okay? But that's unusual. Most of the time, premature ejaculation, and I'm not going to put a timeline on it, for how long should the stimulation be before ejaculation, because there is no way that we can actually measure that. We have got research with people standing by in a bedroom with a stopwatch, trying to see what is normal, and it just doesn't work. So we actually don't have that. But so we'd rather talk about ejaculation, which is too quick, it causes distress to the parties.
Mm.
So there are two kinds of premature ejaculations. One of them is your physiological premature ejaculation. Most people, all people in fact, when they are having sex, there is a buildup of sexual tension, which then reaches a point beyond which orgasm happens.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the so-called point of no return.
Okay.
The point where you can't stop it any longer.
Mm.
Okay, and people know where that point is.
Mm.
So if you're reaching, getting close to that point, you can slow down or you can change your technique to bring it down again. The physiological premature ejaculation problem is where men cannot feel where that point is.
Okay.
So they actually don't know that they're building up and that they're going to ejaculate. And the next thing they know, boom, they've ejaculated.
Mm.
Okay? So they've got no control over it.
Mm.
Now, those are very, very few. That is a brain connection thing, and you were born like that. But there are very, very few that actually fit into that category. The biggest category is your habitualization. This is where you have got used to working very quickly to achieve an orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what you're used to. That is your pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Whether it comes from masturbatory activity or whether it comes from coital activity,
yeah,
it doesn't really matter. That is what you are used to.
Mm.
And we see a lot of that, particularly in young people. And one of the reasons for that is masturbation, obviously. Mm. The speed at which you masturbate in order to achieve an orgasm. And in situations where you have no privacy growing up, In situations where you've got an over-dominant mother, for instance,
mm-hmm.
that is going to be checking at all the little bits of tissue paper that are running around the house,
mm-hmm.
where you are always scared of being caught,
mm-hmm.
then obviously you want to go faster and faster and get mm-hmm. it done. Okay? And that, and eventually you get into that habit.
Mm-hmm.
And that then becomes normal for you.
Mm-hmm.
The speed becomes normal for you. When you come in a situation where there is a partner involved, then there might be a difference in speeds.
Mm.
And that causes distress, obviously. Whether it's a male-female situation, whether it's two males, it doesn't matter. You can have that distressful situation whenever you're in a sexual situation.
Where there's two parties, I often hear it in practice as well, and we have to bear in mind, the moment that there is another person that is entering your physical space, where you go into a sexual space, the person comes with a frame of mind, a different experience, a different physiological response. So things become a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. When you've got two different scripts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to try and get both scripts to reconnect on and be exactly on the same page at exactly the same point, I think very important for people to realize this myth and idea out there that every couple, all the time, whenever they have sex, they come at the same time.
Hmm.
That's movies.
That's just, you know, in the movies. Just
so,
in the movies.
So we have an unrealistic expectation.
Correct. Absolutely. But there is still a situation where a person might have a premature ejaculation or want to do something about it.
Absolutely.
Okay. So what do we do about it?
Are there treatment? Are there pills? Because, you know, people they want to swallow something and fix it.
Mm. Everybody wants a pill, yeah. So actually the treatment for that is you got into the habit of ejaculating that fast.
Mm-hmm.
You now need to get into the habit of ejaculating slower.
So I have to unlearn.
You have to unlearn and relearn, okay? Mm-hmm. There are ways, obviously the stop-start technique mm-hmm. is one of them, where when you feel that you're building up towards the orgasm, you stop the stimulation and the feeling then goes back.
Okay.
That's one technique. There's the squeeze technique for the penis,
mm-hmm.
where if you actually give the head of the penis a very hard squeeze,
mm-hmm.
the erection will go down.
Okay. It's not being
wrapped
over the knuckles.
Yeah, wrapped over the knuckles, yeah. So they work up to a point. But the real treatment is to learn where that point of no return is.
Okay.
And as you're getting closer to it, to learn the discipline of stopping the stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one. There's also medication we can use, but I'll discuss that in a moment.
These techniques that you're talking about, you say, is to learn that. Do you bring your partner in this process, or is that something that you do on your own?
So I think it is initially something that you do on your own.
Okay.
Because you need to re-listen to what your body is saying to you.
Mm-hmm.
You need to reconnect with that. There are also, the partner can also help.
Mm-hmm.
And the partner needs to know that if you just suddenly freeze
mm-hmm.
and do nothing, okay, you haven't had a heart attack or a stroke or something.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to stop the stimulation. So
mm-hmm.
they need to know what's going on.
Okay.
But in terms of training yourself to slow down, there's jelking.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a technique that people are going to look up on the internet. There's tantra.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things, all of these are techniques where you get very close to the point of no return and then let it go down again and rebuild it again.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes for very intense orgasms
mm-hmm.
because it increases the amount of stimulation to everything else. So when eventually it does happen, it's a very intense orgasm.
Mm-hmm.
So apart from anything else, it's worthwhile learning the techniques.
So the important thing, we're going to go into a quick break and listen to some music. What I am hearing is, with premature ejaculation, there are techniques. So it's not necessarily the pills that we have to wait for. There's techniques that we can unlearn and relearn so that I can gain some control over my own body and get control over the right muscles at the right place in my body that I can feel and know the feeling, because that I'm not being caught off guard.
Correct.
And those are what you've named a couple, and I think maybe just rephrase them for our listeners that wanted to make a quickly grab a pen to write them down. Mm. What are techniques that I can go and search for in order to assist myself?
Okay, so there's the squeeze technique, there's gel queen with a Q, and there's tantrad that they can go and look up on the web. Oh, and the other thing that, of course, I forgot is the Kegel exercises. Kegel exercises are where you actually need to learn where your pelvic muscles are. Mm. Pelvic muscles have got a very big influence on ejaculation. Mm. And if you can't control them properly, you can have ejaculatory problems, either too quick or too slow. For listeners who want to look it up, Kegel exercises, you can look them up on the web, but basically they are the muscles that you use to prevent peeing. Mm. So when you want to have a pee and a quick pee and you want to hold it back, those are the muscles that you're contracting. And the exercises are to strengthen those muscles in the pelvic, on the pelvic floor. Mm.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break, then listen to some music, and we'll be back.
Keep listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family.
You're listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family, and today we're talking about ejaculatory problems. Just before the break, we had a discussion on premature ejaculation, and Dr. Baraldi gave us a couple of very valuable tips and certain techniques that we can go and explore. The other ejaculatory problem that people are experiencing is delayed ejaculatory problems. Can you help us to understand that a bit?
So delayed ejaculation is precisely the opposite of premature ejaculation. It is where you're having sex and all the stimulation is there, but you just don't get to an orgasm and ejaculation. Mm. And I'd like our listeners to be aware of the fact that orgasm and ejaculation are not the same thing. They are two completely separate processes. We think that they are the same because they happen so close to each other, but they are actually two completely different processes. So your classical patient will come in and say, "Doc, I just keep on going and going and going, and then nothing happens, and eventually I'm exhausted, or I give up, or I get bored." Okay. Where does that happen? How often does that happen? It's actually quite common in modern day and age. And the majority of it, well, there are two causes. One is neurological, where the nerves are not working properly, which is very, very seldom the case. But the biggest cause of it is antidepressants. So we have medication for depression that can cause delayed ejaculation. Mm-hmm. So in other words, the medicines land up almost blocking the firing mechanism in the nerve system. Mm. Okay, most of your commonly used antidepressants can have that effect. Mm-hmm. We can have erectile dysfunction where the erection is not coming up with some of the blood pressure medicines and some of the other things that we're using, but they don't cause a delayed ejaculation per se. Mm. But it's mostly the antidepressants that do that. So from the antidepressant point of view, remember antidepressants are a whole family of different medicines we can use, and they're all different. They might all be phenomenal, but some of them have got blue eyes and some of them are short and some of them are long. So they all work differently. So it's important that you don't blame the whole family when there's just one person in it that's causing it. The other thing, of course, is that we can use some of the antidepressants for premature ejaculation.
Absolutely.
So we then use that antidepressant for its side effect of slowing down the ejaculation for those that ejaculate too quickly. So we're using that. That's one example of using a drug for its side effect rather than for its primary effect.
Okay.
So if you have delayed ejaculation and it is caused by the antidepressant, then the one thing you must not do ever with an antidepressant is suddenly stop it.
Absolutely.
Okay, because your brain has got used to functioning with the help of the medication.
Mm.
You now suddenly stop it and it can't do it.
Mm.
And you will go straight back into a depression.
Mm.
So you need to get professional advice on that. Do you still need the antidepressant,
mm-hmm.
first of all? Secondly, do we still need this dosage of antidepressant?
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, is there a different antidepressant that we can use that might have less of a problem with ejaculation?
Absolutely.
And these are discussions you need to have with your physician or your psychiatrist.
Mm.
Because once you're on antidepressant, you need to be able to manage it. And if you're going to come off it, you need to be able to taper it down.
Mm.
All of them. Because your brain needs to be able to learn to function again without the help of the antidepressant.
Mm.
And just stopping the pills, you're just going to look for problems.
Mm.
So although the temptation is there that I'm having an ejaculatory problem, for heaven's sake, I've just met somebody, let me just dump these pills, that's not the right thing to do.
Mm.
Really not. You're just doing yourself more of a damage.
Okay.
There are some antidepressants that actually speed up ejaculation.
Mm-hmm.
And one can certainly have a look at those in conjunction with your physician.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like with most medications, there can be drug-drug interactions, so you've got to have a look at the whole package, exactly what else you're swallowing and taking, because everything has an effect on everything.
What is important, and you keep on talking about, we have to talk to our physician.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the important part that is coming out every time we talk about experiences of sexual discomfort or disorders, is people don't talk.
Correct.
And if we don't talk and we just try and fix things on our own, we might be panel beating something, but we're actually not getting to the right core of the cause of it. And we might be thinking that I'm battling with erectile dysfunction. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, I've got delayed ejaculation, and I didn't even know, because I don't know the names.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just experienced that something is not right. So it's important that you talk to your doctor about these things, because doctors don't always ask you
Correct.
About these things.
Correct. Unfortunately, that is one of the problems. Sexual medicine is not really taught very well at medical schools, and that's global. And, of course, your physician sits there with his own sexual issues like everybody else
mm-hmm.
does. He's mm-hmm. you know, he's not a medigod. So in very often your healthcare practitioner will not ask the question up front. And if they do very often, they might catch you by surprise
mm-hmm.
as the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what do you do then? Oh, my God, he's asked me this question. No, it's fine.
Mm.
It's fine. I don't have any problems in that department.
Mm.
And then you go out and you think, shit, man, I should have told him something.
Yeah.
You know, that they, yeah. Because I wasn't ready to bring it to the table because it caught me by surprise. So don't be scared of asking your healthcare practitioner. Ask them. There's no embarrassment around it. Your healthcare practitioner may not be fully trained in sexual medicine, which is fine. He doesn't have to be. But he can have a look at the basic drug-drug interactions, he can make a diagnosis, and he can refer you to someone that works in the field.
Absolutely. Okay?
But until you start that process, nothing's ever going to happen.
Mm.
And what I see with patients coming in sometimes is that they have tried this, they have tried that, they have tried the over-the-counter, they've spoken to their friends, they've gone on to Google, they have tried herbal products, they have gone to a meditation session with somebody who can does whatever. And at the end of the day, they come in because they're desperate, because now they are fully convinced that it's terminal. The condition is gone so far and it's so bad that there's nothing you can do about it. And all that emotional pain that you put yourself through by trying to fix something you don't understand is completely unnecessary. Completely unnecessary. So my advice to people is, if there is a sexual issue, bring it to a healthcare practitioner, start the process of having it properly evaluated, and then we can see how far it is, and we can see how serious the problem really is.
Mm.
Because if you just Google you know, you'll be dead in 2 weeks. You know,
you are going to find something wrong with yourself on Google.
Absolutely, you must.
That's guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
Whether that is the right thing that's wrong with you, we don't know. Itse, what would you, in terms of wrapping up today, we're talking about ejaculatory problems, premature ejaculation, delayed ejaculation. What is the essence you want the listeners to take with them today?
Well, definitely, if you've got either one of those two, it has to be your issue, not your partner's issue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It has to be something that you experience and you are unhappy with, not something that your partner says, hey, it's too long or too short or whatever. It's the way you feel about it. It's got to cause distress to you, and you need then to see a physician for that. You need to get professional advice for sorting it out. Remember also that in a relationship situation, when you are with a partner, there may be a difference in ejaculatory speeds, which is fine, but you mustn't let the relationship put even more stress on you. So you mustn't go and look for help because the partner wants you to do it. It has to be something that distresses you.
For me, what is crucial, what you're saying, is that the individual, and to say is, you must experience the distress, but if it is causing relationship distress,
yep,
I would then suggest that as a couple,
you go for
some counseling so that we can actually talk about that and find a way to say is, where's the middle ground of meeting one another? So that it becomes a healthier sexual environment where both parties can adjust or help or work together to find a medium that works for both.
Correct. Correct. Mm-hmm. So if you are in a relationship, it's not a question of you going to look for help because you've been sent to look for help.
Uh-huh.
You need to come in as a couple and work it out together. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes.
Wonderful. Thank you, Itse. You are listening to GaySA Radio, where you are family, and this is the wrap-up for ejaculatory problems. Let's talk.
Do you want to meet the person who can introduce you to your next client? Net Your Niche is an online networking platform that reduces the time, money, and effort of traditional marketing and allows you to focus on what truly matters. Meeting someone who can refer you to the exact person you're looking for. No more calling secretaries and being put on hold. Sign up today at a 20% discount and make sure you don't miss out on meeting new clients any longer. Visit us on nyn.co.za or call us on 012-947-9599.
You are listening to GaySA Radio, where you are family. Welcome to all our listeners to our show called Let's Talk. This is the show where we're talking about various topics that influence our daily lives or can influence our daily lives. A warm welcome to the Let's Talk team, Dr. Itse Baraldi, our specialist medical practitioner and medical sexologist, Chris Sakutsia, myself, psychologist and psychosexologist, and then Shal Grieff, our specialist counselor with special interest in gay and lesbian relationships. For today's topic, it's myself and Dr. Baraldi in studio, and we are talking about desire disorder.
Hello, Krista.
Hello, Itse. So, where do we start? Do you have a desire for today's topic?
Yes, desire disorders, sexual desire disorders, I presume you're talking about. You're not talking about hamburgers. Yes, desire disorder in men and in women is very common.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a place where there's a lot of relationship problems and a lot of strife that can come from desire disorders. Because invariably, well, there are two issues. One is in the person themselves, and the male themselves, and if they are in a relationship, a whole different dynamic happens.
Mm.
So desire disorder in the individual male can be physiological, can be part of something happening with the body, and or something happening with the perception, the person's perception of their sexual identity. What do I mean by that? Well, the physiological very often is a low testosterone. Remember that testosterone doesn't do very much for sexual performance, but it is involved in sexual desire. So if testosterone is low, then you're likely not to have a lot of desire. There isn't that drive to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing that should be checked. And mm-hmm. that's a blood test mm-hmm. that needs to be done. The other reason for desire, so-called desire disorder, is suppressed desire in an individual. And that is where a person has got a disturbed body image. They may be overweight. They may have had bad relationships in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They may have had unsuccessful tries at hookups, you know, on the dating apps and in places where people meet. And then that person just says, you know what, I'm just going to suppress this desire because it's not going to go anywhere anyway. Okay, I am just not putting myself out there to be hurt again. And so the desire is there, but it's suppressed. The treatment for desire disorder obviously is to handle both of those issues mm-hmm. within the individual. When we're looking at a relationship where there's another party involved, then things get incredibly more complex. Because invariably, the person who doesn't have the desire might not want to have sex with their partner because of a whole lot of relationship issues. And therefore saying, you know, we're just not going to go there. The partner, on the other hand, develops issues out of that because now what is wrong?
Hmm.
Is there a third party in the mix? Have I done something wrong? Am I no longer attractive? Do I need to go for a boob job? Or whatever it is. So the other person in the relationship internalizes that behavior and very often thinks it's either because of a threat from another party outside or it is their fault. And that then causes, from there, there are a lot of other relationship problems.
Mm-hmm.
So desire disorder is something that needs to be addressed because it can have physical causes, but the majority of the problem is in the relationship and in the psychosexual makeup of the individual.
Is it possible? And I think that's what a lot of people ask themselves. If they've been in a long relationship, and there's history, like we all have, the longer the relationship, the more history there is.
Correct.
And the dynamics that go around mm-hmm. and the daily stress.
Correct.
Could that be one of the reasons why the desire disorder actually starts showing its face?
Yeah, I think it is one of the factors.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a look at the statistics in new relationships, sexual activity is quite frequent.
Mm-hmm.
The longer the relationship exists, the less frequent the sexual activity becomes.
Mm.
Now, that can be because of the history that's building up. But in men, at any rate, it is very often habituation. Men need diversity.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we're made. We are made to impregnate as many females as possible.
Mm.
And even in gay relationships, it's the same thing. There's always this looking around. There's always this looking for something different.
Mm.
We go onto the website and we look at pornography. But we don't look at the same pornography twice because now it's boring. We're going to look at something else.
Okay.
So there's that continuous need for innovation and for new stimulation.
Mm. Mm.
So in a relationship where things become routine, that stimulation disappears.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's Friday evening, we're going to eat fish and chips and then we're going to have sex. And we've been doing that for the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's boring.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes work as opposed to something exciting that you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
So in those situations, the couples need to spice up their relationship by doing different things,
mm-hmm.
by trying to remember and perhaps even recapture what got you together in the first place.
What I often see in practice, and that is as the pressure of daily life actually increases, there's so much to do, the pressure at work, the demand, the hours that are being spent to just keep afloat, results in the couple actually spending less and less quality individual time. Or time as a couple.
Together, yeah.
So they don't, the couple does not get the injection on a daily basis. to keep it going. Mm. We start actually living past one another.
Correct.
So when we are then together, it's like it we have to again sort of find a way to connect. And then there's history of where it takes too much effort, everybody's exhausted, so you actually start looking for quick fixes and you look for diversity somewhere else.
Somewhere else or in something else?
Or in something else.
And often these days it's, you know, it's a computer screen.
Mm-hmm.
That provides that. And for me, that is a completely natural thing that should happen. What is unnatural is that the couple don't do it together.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they did it together, especially a two male couple, they both have the same need for diversity and visual stimulation, men are very visual. And if they do it together, then they can bring that diversity into their normal relationship and rekindle thing. And it very often it's a question of just initially it's the video is the stimulation, and then we get into each other because that's why we're in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, forget it, and the video just plays along in the background by itself.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the things you need to start doing together. I think what happens in long-term relationships, we stop doing things together.
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the factors that you've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually have to start making dates. Make a date with each other. And we are going to do this, we are going to do that. We plan it. We take the phones off the hook, if you still have phones. Otherwise, just switch off your cell phone. You switch off the front doorbell or whatever else. You just cut out all things that could possibly intervene. And you spend that quality time together.
So what we're actually saying to one another, that when we talk about desire disorder, the majority of the cause of this disorder is not physiological. The majority of it has actually got to do with the fact that we are not into one another because we're passing one another. Is that what we're saying?
Not quite. So from a psychological point of view, yes. From a physiological point of view, testosterone declines with age. And if you are overweight, for instance, testosterone will be low. You most likely also will have metabolic syndrome. And that can be the start of a low desire disorder, which is then complicated by everything else we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But for men, definitely, if there's a desire disorder, I just don't feel like it. I'm not even masturbating. I don't feel like it at all. Look at the testosterone.
Mm.
And in particular, although this can happen to all men, but the bear community needs to look at that very carefully. Because overweight, with very often high blood pressure, with very often high cholesterols, metabolic syndrome will bring down the testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be a symptom of other things that are going on in the body that need to be addressed. So we can't just say it's all relationship issues. Granted, we all accept that the best aphrodisiac is your partner.
Mm-hmm.
But there may be other physiological issues. So for men, definitely, it's an issue that they need to have looked at from a medical point of view.
Okay, wonderful. I think we're going to take a short break, listen to some music, and we'll be back.
I know you will like Gay SA Radio on Facebook. There's the main page, Gay SA Radio, as well as all the show pages. Like us there.
You are listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family. And today we're talking about desire disorder. Now, just before the break, we were touching on a little bit and to say, and it's helped me to understand as a woman. So men, often when we talk about desire disorder, there can be a physiological aspect to it. The interesting thing is that we find with women is, and often when I work with women, is they say, we need to get you out of your head and into your body. Because women tend to not be in the mood. They are busy with house chores. They're busy running around, doing certain things. They are the home carer, the nurturer, physiologically and spontaneously and traditionally. That is how we were designed. And what they have found is that women tend to have a responsive desire.
Okay.
So what happens is we often are not in the mood. But when I'm being prodded and poked and felt and in the right way, and I'm open to it, it starts feeling nice, and I start getting into the mood. So often what we tend to find is, if you're going to sit and wait until you are in the mood as a woman, you're not going to go there. Especially if once the bonding phase, the initial, you know, all I can't get on without you, all of those hormones are there actively getting you. You get to the point of where the nesting starts happening. The spontaneous desire tends to go more into the background. Now it's maintaining the status quo at home. You know, the nesting, everybody must feel okay. So the sexual desire tends to wane. So we have to, and we touched on it earlier, and to say we need to make sure that the couple actually get time and spend time together and do things together to open the door for this sexual exploring to happen. Otherwise, it's just too many steps that need to happen before I actually get into the mood.
So that's interesting, because obviously men are completely different. That's why we say we are two separate species. But in men, the desire very often is quite spontaneous. So you just have that sexual drive as a male where you just feel like sex. And you will do something about it very often. It's a drive. It's a push. So whether it's masturbation or looking for a partner or whatever, you're going to get that release because there's a push to it. It's almost like, you know, for men not to respond to that. You know, if you're going to say, you know, you should be celibate, you shouldn't do any of this. It's almost like saying you must never pee again. It's just impossible. It's a drive. It's that strong. Okay. In males, of course, when there's a desire disorder, where I now don't feel like anything, it becomes, I start feeling a bit more like a woman, like you know, like I'm going to respond to something, but I don't initiate something. And then if my partner wants to initiate something, and my penis doesn't respond because of other issues, then all hell breaks loose. So often that desire disorder in men is to avoid embarrassment with erectile difficulties. And those can be addressed and fixed. So it's really not, there's no reason why anybody should be suffering because of that. And once you fix that, I always say to my patients, you know what, if you're going to build a wall, you need tools. So let's make sure you've got the right tools, and then you can go and decide where and how this wall is going to be. But you can't go and build a wall without the tools. So you need that first. So that desire disorder is the desire to pick up the toolbox and take it to build the wall, okay? That is hormone related, okay? The toolbox is the functioning, and where you're going to build the wall is the outcome that you actually want. So with a desire disorder, you would become, I'm not entirely sure if reactive is going to fix it because of the other problems that might be there. Okay, it might just be more pressure. It might become a feeling of, I'm doing work now, it's for Friday evening, we have to do it. It's that kind of a feeling. From that point of view, I think women sound to me a lot easier, because the minute there is stimulation of some kind, it kicks in. Or do we also have in women all the other issues of dysmorphic disorder, all of
absolutely.
Those things?
Absolutely. And I think overloaded, overstressed, and I think we have to bring that in. I think the reality of today's stressful life often impacts my ability to be present enough, to be there or want to engage. It's like, I just need to, I'm exhausted.
I want
so
to rest.
People are tired.
Yeah.
And the relationship tends to be pushed back to the back burner, because what pays the rent? So we have longer hours of working and less relationship time. So if we're dealing with physiological concerns, and we're dealing with, I actually need to be in the mood in order to go there, and we sit with exhaustion, we're sitting with troubled relationship futures. And I think that's another topic for maybe another day, but that is really something important to talk about. And then we start taking, you were talking about men and the impact of antidepressants.
Yeah.
And often women, if you are already not a spontaneous desire person,
and you add antidepressants.
And I was wondering in terms of birth control, of the impact of birth control on desire.
It has a huge impact.
So we're sitting here with, if it is heterosexual couples, we're sitting with two different species that we're trying to get together to actually have a long-term relationship.
Yeah.
And we have physiological differences, and we have emotional differences, and then we have the daily pressures of life and different medications. So it becomes quite complex. And I like what you were saying earlier. It's a, it's so important that we stop for a moment and stop looking for, is there something wrong with me? Is there something wrong with you? What is wrong with our relationship? We need to really professionally go and sit down to say, what are things that can be fixed, that can be addressed? What are medications that we can reduce? What are supporting therapies that can be brought in? And then how can we as a couple deal with whatever challenges here to make sure that what brought us together the first time, we rekindle.
Correct. The other thing that we need to address, though, is expectations. So, as a man, I am expected to, by who, I don't know, have sex every day, let's say. Society has got certain expectations. We all grow up thinking a relationship is going to be A, B, C, D, and E. This is how it's going to be. And maybe one of the things that we need to sit down and quietly talk about is our expectations. Are our expectations reasonable? Are they viable? I mean, if you're sitting in a low-paid job and you've got two kids, why have an expectation that you're going to have the life of a jet setter? Is that a reasonable expectation? It's a nice thing to want to do, but is it reasonable? And if it's not likely to happen, how much effort are you going to put into it? And I'm not saying that, you know, you get to a point where you have to lower your standards, but I do think you have to get to a point where you need to be realistic about what can be achieved. Otherwise, you're going to be unhappy all the time. And the desire disorder fits into that category. It's not a unique thing to desire disorder, but it does fit into that category of, you know what, I've got a stressful job, I've got this, I've got that, I've got the two kids, or we've got the two dogs that are forever fighting with each other, or whatever it is, and I don't even have sex. What kind of a life do I have? You know, and you kind of give up and just go from one morning to the next morning, to the next breakfast, to the next morning, and just carry on like a machine. And where's the quality of life there? So all of these things impact on the quality of life. I think that that's the ultimate measurement that we should have a look at. It doesn't matter how many times there is sex in the week. It doesn't matter how much you're earning. The issue is, put it all together. What is your quality of life and where can you change it? And you'll find, I'm sure, that the minute we change one parameter there, one thing there, the quality of life changes and automatically all the others also change. So if I'm working too much overtime, work out a way of not needing to do that, whether it is because we reduce the expenditure or I'm changing jobs or whatever it is. Once that stress is off, my desire disorder might also improve because now I've got more time for my family and I've got more time for my relationship and all the others. So they are all interlinked to a large extent. And I think blaming desire disorder for a lot of the problems is not, it's not the cause, it's maybe the result of a lot of things.
Absolutely. And I think that is, that's quite crucial. As I always say, we cannot, life's pressure and what it taxes you to actually deal with on a daily basis is not necessarily going to change. Because that, you need to keep the roof over your head and you need to actually pitch up and do your job because that pays the bills. But we have to find out what way we actually can restructure some of our time in a more constructive way. So we need to work within the parameters and say, how can I approach this that my relationship gets priority as well? Because we often overcommit on things, and the place that actually gets the worst part of me is my relationship, because that's the end of the day. I always say in the morning, I get up and I'm fresh, and who gets the best of me the whole day that I'm working? My work people.
Yeah, correct.
Tonight, then that my tank is all exhausted, who gets that part of my relationship?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I need to look at where my relationship can become a priority. And the moment that that happens, my bucket starts being filled and my desire disorder starts being pushed to the end because now I want to spend time with you. And the moment that there's that want, a lot of these things start coming
by themselves.
And yeah. Then obviously, yes, you look at the physiological aspects that you can address. You look at the medication that you are on that could possibly contribute to the desire disorder and address that with your physician.
Yeah.
And then you deal with your relationship as well. So it's actually a two-pronged approach, like we were discussing. Whenever we're experiencing sexual discomfort, disorders, all of those sexual problems, we need to realize that there's often, it stands on two legs.
There are two causes.
And the one can be a physiological and the other one is a psychological, emotional or relationship aspect to it.
I think just for men, it's also important to remember that you can have a relationship without sex and that sex doesn't define your relationship. So if a relationship is built on sex, when the novelty wears off, the relationship will go. If you are in a long-term relationship, there's obviously more that's holding you together than just the sexual component. Okay, and it's okay just to spend time with each other in the relationship. And if the one has got erectile dysfunction and it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. It's not a sign that he's not interested anymore, which is how it's very often interpreted. You're not getting an erection, therefore I'm not turning you on. And that's dreadful. Okay? But if you're in a proper relationship and the relationship is strong, then you can understand that these are things that happen as you get older. You can address them together with the help of a clinician or a therapist, and you can build on the relationship because ultimately what you really want in your life is that relationship. It's not necessarily the orgasm, because that comes and goes. And quite frankly, we can't remember our orgasms. There are very few of us that can actually recapture in our own mind a memory of an orgasm, whereas you can recapture in your own mind a lot of things about your relationship. That is really where the value is. It's in the relationship, not necessarily the orgasm.
So we actually need to realize and understand that in a long-term relationship, for that relationship to actually have the capacity to continue fulfillingly, we need intimacy, and sex is part of intimacy.
But it's not the only thing.
Yeah, I think that was quite a nice and comforting discussion that we also realize that there are some things that we still can work on. Yeah. It's not, we don't become prisoners to it. We have opportunities, we have options. And here at Gay SA Radio, where we talk about things, these are always the little bit of tips that we can carry with us and take with us, and we hope that inspires you. You are listening to Gay SA Radio, where you are family, and thank you for listening to Let's Talk.